Hello and welcome to the Opening Bell, the boxing news podcast. My name is Matt Christie and I am with John Dennen.
What up?
How are things going, John?
Spectacular. En fuego.
Boxing is certainly a roller coaster, and we experienced a horrible low at the weekend. Mike Tal passed away hours after losing a highly competitive battle with Dale Evans. It was tough. It was tough this week in the boxing news office. Tough to hear that Mike Tal had passed away. Tough to kind of put yourself in the mindset of Dale Evans. And also, you know, for the top of that list is Mike Tal's family, who must be reeling. His children, they're now left without a father and everything else. And it really is hard. And as editor of Boxing News, it's difficult. What do you write? I mean, you can, in this week's magazine, I did speak to a lot of people who were involved in the exceptionally unfortunate accident at the weekend. And it wasn't an easy process. It also becomes, as I kind of say this week, it becomes difficult to defend the sport that you've loved for as long as you can remember. When people lose their lives in a boxing ring. But ultimately, I think, as I say in the column, and I won't go into too much detail, in that when people are unfortunate enough to be in these incidents, when people are seriously injured, what you do see, I mean, Michael Watson, perhaps the most famous member of that very small club, is they champion boxing from the rooftops. In next week's issue, we speak to Kieran Farrell himself, was seriously injured. And I suspect that Mike Tal, the last thing he'd want is for boxing to be banned. What we have to do is go back, and what the British Boxing Board of Control are doing at the moment is investigating every single aspect of the lead up to that fight, the fight itself, the immediate aftermath, and just to see if there's anything else we can do. I think ultimately, and what British boxing has done exceptionally well, perhaps the best of any commission in the world, is learn from these things. Michael Watson, as I mentioned, what happened with him against Chris Eubank, I think in 1991, what followed that was quite a tricky period for boxing. Ultimately, it became safer than it ever has, and I do believe, hand on heart, that boxing in this country is safer than it's ever been. But that's not to say, I mean, to kind of sit on that kind of assumption would be foolish, would be to perhaps stunt any progress. I think what we have to do is just to keep analysing things, keep looking at things, to see if there are any ways to make the sport safer. But going back to originally what I said, it is always difficult to defend a sport where punching someone is so prominent. I mean, what's your opinion on it? Because it's a shame. I mean, there are people out there that despise boxing, that they want it banned, and incidents like this quite understandably give their arguments fuel. What's your point of view on banning boxing, John?
There are dangers inherent in the sport, though, you know, the important thing is to make it as safe as possible and that the people involved in boxing know the risks. It seems there's more, there's a sort of anti-boxing sentiment out there in a way that isn't directed at other dangerous sports that do have accidents and don't seem to get the sort of moral indignation from certain quarters as boxing. And I always think of the beneficial impact boxing can have on people's lives. It's something that people involved in the sport will see all the time. You know, it gives young people a direction. It does actually keep them fit and healthy. And you know, it's not so much comparing boxing and trying to say that, you know, Formula One or horse riding or whatever is more dangerous. It's more for boxing to look at what ways it can be made safer, what can be learned from tragedies like this. With, you know, and that's, you know, people in boxing will understand, will sort of feel the grief about this more than anyone, because they all sort of understand what boxers are like, what they're going through, why they're doing it, and will also feel immense sympathy for the man in the opposite corner, or the referee, or the coaches involved. It is very, very difficult for them to deal with. But just the hope is you can, you know, look at this and learn from it, and that hopefully something like this won't happen in British boxing for another 20 years. I mean, I think there have only been 2 fatalities in the last 20 years, which, you know, but of course any accident like that is a tragedy, so you know, any one is too many, because I think boxing can be safe. It's what people involved know all the time, because, you know, lots of people have bouts and contests or sparring sessions, you know, and the vast majority, almost all of the time, will walk away from them feeling fit and healthy and happy and glad that they're part of it. It's just learning from these awful moments.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, what we asked as we do every week, we ask 4 people that are involved in the boxing industry, yeah, kind of a topical question. One of them was, what more, if anything, can be done to improve safety in boxing? And I think one of the things that does seem to be that people seem to mention, and kind of what I've heard from people as well, is the issue of making weight could be a very serious problem, in that obviously it puts a strain on the body initially to get down in weight, and if then people are asked to lose more weight, say at the weigh-in or just after the weigh-in or whenever, then the whole rehydration can become a problem, and we know, or medical studies have told us, that the brain will be the last thing to be rehydrated, and I think that's what can cause problems. And someone made the point in the week that it's rare that when somebody's seriously injured, it occurs in a heavyweight fight. There are a couple of things. I can think of Greg Page at the turn of the century, a former WBA heavyweight champion who was seriously injured in the ring. But it does seem to be that it's when someone is fighting to make weight where problems can occur. Is there anything we can do there? I mean, Adam Booth this week made the good point that perhaps isotonic drinks should be legal now, between rounds and whatever else, that we can use that for rehydration purposes during the contest. So it just shows that there are things that we can look at, doesn't it?
Yeah. And, you know, and maybe part of it is, you know, getting more information out there about safe ways to make weight and that kind of thing, not doing extreme things that some people still do. You know, maybe that's not getting people more open-minded about using nutritionists and sports scientists. Not everyone can afford that. But then, you know, maybe people like us can get more information out there available to boxers about, you know, how to do nutrition, how to do the weight, warning signs to look out for, and that kind of thing. I think there will be lessons to learn. I don't know the ins, you know, and I'm sure, you know, I don't know the ins and outs of this particular case, but hopefully we will discover more about it.
I think what you mentioned there as well is kind of the education of boxers, every single boxer, and one of the biggest kind of, we mentioned at the start, boxing becomes hard to defend. One of the things that you can say about boxing, and one of the things that people use as a defence of boxing, is that the fighters know exactly what they're getting into. They know the risks, and they're, you know, that's how they want to live their lives, etc. But I think there is also some truth in the boxers perhaps have got to, gotta be careful how I say it, but the boxers have got to be honest with themselves as well, in terms of if they are crashing weight, they've got to be aware that that's having damage on this, that that could potentially be having damage on their body. If they have been suffering with any injuries or anything like that, they have to make they're declared when they speak to the doctors the day before the fight or on the night of the fight. Because, but at the same time, you put it, you look at boxers and you put yourself in the mind of a boxer, and ultimately they've got to get paid. They want to get paid. They're not perhaps going to put themselves, or they're not going to put that pay packet in jeopardy by going, oh, well, hang on, I had a headache last Tuesday, because potentially that could pull that they may not be they would not take part in the fight and they would not get paid at the end of it. And a lot of them have got mouths to feed, etc., etc. It's difficult.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it'd be the end of the world if there was a different payment structure in boxing, as in if you weren't dependent on your purse per fight, you know.
Yeah.
Say, like,
yeah, it's a good point.
You know, the idea with like the World Series of Boxing, which is an Olympic boxing format, is they're basically on a salary and get an appearance bonus. That's the idea. Or like, yeah, if you're on GB, you're on, you know, you're on a grant, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So if you're injured, you're injured. You're not having, you know, yeah, you don't want anyone put in a position out of, you know, economic necessity where they got to go through a fight where they're not 100%. And also, maybe there's a, maybe we could do with a little bit of a shift in attitude amongst, you know, us as observers or as fans. You know, if a box, you know, so often you hear criticism for a boxer being stopped too early or pulled out too early. And it's like, you know, does everyone really need to boo the referee, Kell Brook being pulled out against Golovkin? To be, you know, we can err on the side of being a little bit more willing to stop fights.
Exactly.
I know, you know.
And at the same time as well, should we be so judgmental when a fighter actually does pull himself out of a fight before it's even started? When he says, look, I'm not... And it happens, you
yeah.
know, they're injured or they're not fit to fight or whatever, and the fight doesn't happen. And our first reaction is, "Oh, he's bottling it." Ultimately,
yeah.
Perhaps we have got to be a little bit more sympathetic, as you say, as observers.
We shouldn't be so quick to judge in certain
yeah.
situations. We had an interesting week last week where Jürgen Bremer had a sort of ended up with a minor muscle tear and pulled out of his fight with Nathan Cleverley. And I guess, you know, that probably wasn't particularly well received, especially when at first people thought it was meant to be a dislocated elbow and then it was just a muscle injury.
Yeah.
Then the same week, midweek, Isaac Chamberlain was boxed in an amazing fight for the Southern Area title at York Hall, dislocated his shoulder. And insisted on carrying on, managed to pop it back into place.
Yeah.
And won, that was in like the third round, and won the 10 rounder on points. You know, and that was like, I mean, that was spectacular to see. But yeah, I suppose he should have be praised for being brave and stuff.
Yeah.
But maybe Bremer shouldn't be criticised for not,
looking
not wanting
himself,
to fight with one
looking,
arm.
Yes, why should he? Why should he? Exactly right. We'll move on from. From Mike Towle, but I mean, just to be clear, while we're mentioning can things improve and what have you, 100% that everything from it looks like everything that was supposed to have been carried out beforehand in terms of safety was it was just a terrible, terrible, terrible accident. But as I said, our thoughts are very much with everybody who was involved, from Mike Towle's team to his family to the Dale Evans team and family, and of course the officials and promoters. It's going to take a long, long, long time for those wounds to heal, but our thoughts are very much with everybody involved. If we move on, you mentioned Nathan Cleverley there. It seemed to be ramping up into, perhaps not Ward Gatti, but it was ramping up into a really, really interesting fight. I sense that Cleverley was perhaps a little bit behind, but very, very much in the fight. And it was a shock to see Bremer come out. Not come out for. Was it the sixth or was it seventh? He didn't come out for. I can't remember. I think it was the sixth.
Let me just look through the latest edition of Boxing News magazine, available for merely. How much does this cost? £3.49. Much cheaper if you subscribe via our website.
Do you know what? If you
pocketmags.com.
If you subscribe digitally, incidentally, while we're on the subject, I think it can cost as little as about 60p an issue, something like that.
And more importantly, you'll be helping keep us alive.
Exactly. Okay, what did you make of the Cleverly Bramer fight before it all ended?
That's a great question, Matt. I don't even know what I was doing on Saturday. I literally don't know what I was doing, but I wasn't watching Cleverly Bramer.
Okay, so you haven't seen the fight, that's fair enough. Okay, well, Cleverly was being typical Cleverly. He was taking quite a few shots, but it did seem as well that he's working to a game plan, and it wasn't the most conclusive of victories. However, I've got nothing but respect for Nathan Cleverly for going out to Germany, taking on Jürgen Bramer. Jürgen Bramer, let's not forget, hadn't lost a fight since 2008. And ultimately, he won the fight. Jürgen Bramer could not continue. Nathan Cleverly could. Nathan Cleverly wins. It puts him right back up there. And if you consider, when was it? 2 years ago, 3 years ago, he was getting hammered all around the ring by Sergei Kovalev. He's done really well to get back to this level.
And it's time for the Kovalev rematch.
I don't think it is time for the Kovalev rematch, which brings me on to the next point with this fight. And I think that I don't want to downplay what Nathan Cleverly has achieved by going over to Germany, beating Jürgen Bramer. But there has been a lot of chat this week of him being a two-time world champion, Wales's first two-time world champion, when effectively he won a sliver of the title. He won the WBA regular belt. Kovalev, of course, holds the WBA world belt, real belt, whatever. Effectively, this should have been an eliminator for Cleverly, but it certainly puts him right back in the top 10. Ideally, presuming you were joking with this sets up a Kovalev rematch.
I think I was.
What would be the ideal next step for Nathan Cleverly? Parade this belt as if it's a real one,
yeah,
and make some cash, which you perhaps, you know, if you look at that, why blame him for doing that? Or should he? What I'm getting at is it must be difficult because to have lost to Sergei Kovalev so convincingly, and at the moment Sergei Kovalev is atop the division. So Cleverly is a proud guy. I'm sure he wants to be regarded as the best on the planet. That's not going to happen unless he somehow miraculously gets through Kovalev again, is it?
Yeah,
or Andre Ward.
Yeah, if Andre Ward beats Kovalev, which I actually think he will, even though it's a great fight, does Cleverly have a good case to challenge Andre Ward? I don't think there'll be a huge amount of interest in that. You know, Kovalev beat Nathan so convincingly. Ward's not as big a puncher as Kovalev is, but you know, if it doesn't, but even then, it's not like people are going to think Cleverly's going to beat Andre Ward. It's not going to be that compelling a fight. If it's a good payday and he can get in there and get the shot at him, fair play to him. You could say the really exciting fight for Cleverly would be a rematch with Fonfara,
because
it was a great fight, a really good fight, and obviously Nathan lost that.
And it is
trying to get some revenge. And, you know, Fonfara, I know he had a bad loss. That's why he sort of plummeted out of our world top 10. But so he'll want to get back in the mix.
And what Cleverly does seem to thoroughly enjoy is a good old scrap. He does seem to be in it as much for the glory and the money as just absolutely loving it. He's an intelligent guy, no doubt could go out and earn some serious cash in another industry, a less hazardous one, but he chooses boxing because he loves it. And I think you know, a lot of credit to him for that as well. I think Fonfara too would make perfect sense. I know that, who did he lose to? Joe Hanks or something like that?
I want to say Joe Smith.
Joe Smith?
I could be wrong.
I don't know.
I'm possibly
maybe
wrong.
It is Joe Smith. Joe Smith Jr.?
Could be.
Don't know. Anyway, it was an upset loss for Fonfara. But, you know, so what? Let's not worry about that one. Okay, also what going about, on... What? Sorry, go on.
What about Cleverly Bernard Hopkins? Hopkins says he wants one more fight.
Oh, do you know what? There was talk of that. They were kind of leading up towards that fight when Cleverly was WBO champion. I know when Cleverly was with Frank Warren, that was what they were looking at. I'd pick him to beat old Bernard these days, to be honest.
Is that the big money fight for him?
Is it?
I don't know. Is it? I'm asking.
I think Hopkins should stay away.
From Clev.
I think he should stay away from Clev.
I think
Clev, stay away from the Clevmeister General Burn.
I think Clev, they should stay away from Artur Beterbiev, who, if they actually wheel him out for a fight, should be like the coming man.
You think who should stay away from?
I think Beterbiev is like the rising light heavyweight to look out for.
He is.
I'd like to see Beterbiev fight the winner of Ward Kovalev.
It's an interesting division, and Cleverly has put himself right back in the middle of it. Moving on to other things that happened, of course, this week. Tyson Fury. Should we get the action out of the way first?
I actually
Let's
watched
do that.
The Joseph Parker fight.
Oh, so you're
I don't
able
know
to
what
talk
I was doing on
that.
Saturday night.
You're able to talk about that, okay.
I'm able to talk about that with the same level of ignorance I talk about most things.
Okay, so the Joseph Parker fight, there was quite a lot of talk prior to Tyson Fury, Vladimir Klitschko being cancelled, that Joseph Parker would get the Anthony Joshua fight. We spoke last week, I think, briefly about Parker taking on Alexander Dimitrenko and mentioned that it was a potential banana skin. What it actually was a bit of a farce. Ending was, at least. It seemed to me that Parker landed a half-decent body shot as they were kind of in a bit of a...
A bit of a hug
fest going on. Parker kind of broke from that, landed a half-decent body shot. Dimitrenko already seemed to be falling and was on his knees when Parker almost stepped back and took a run-up and clouted him straight in the ribs. And then Dimitrenko rolled around on the floor, quite genuinely in some pain. I think so. I think it was genuine pain. Referee then sees Dimitrenko down there in some pain. I thought that he'd seen that it was as illegal punches can get. I thought he's waving his arms going, no, we're not having that. And then within 10 seconds, Parker's arm was raised and he was declared a winner via third round knockout.
But was Dimitrenko trying to get Parker disqualified?
It looked
really weird.
It wasn't the kind of emphatic knockout. I mean, I was looking at social media I think it was only a few hours later, or it might have even been on the Sunday, and it's like Sky Sports Twitter feed is, watch Joseph Parker KO Dimitrenko. No, it's not quite highlight reel stuff.
I don't think we
didn't learn a great deal about Joseph Parker from that fight.
It hasn't sent shockwaves through the heavyweight division.
No, it hasn't.
But, you know, if the titles are stripped from Fury, Parker could end up fighting for a vacant WBO belt against Andy Ruiz.
Yeah, I mean, I'd give Andy Ruiz half a shot in that, to be honest. I would. I'd give Andy Ruiz half a shot of winning that. I think he could give Joseph Parker some problems.
If you were Joseph Parker, what would you do? Would you fight Andy Ruiz for the WBO title in the greatest heavyweight title fight in Auckland? Would you try to get a shot at fight, a shot at fighting Klitschko for a vacant, maybe a vacant WBA a belt if that's stripped from Fury, or would you try and get the Anthony Joshua fight on November the 26th in Manchester?
I would have... I don't know. My first thought was Joshua. I don't know. I could understand why he would go. I would think out of those three options, the least appealing is Klitschko. But I suppose he could fight Klitschko in Germany and potentially earn more money than he would earn fighting Anthony Joshua London.
It's the fall in the pound, mate. Brexit. Yeah.
Brexit.
It's killing the currency markets. Cables tanked.
But I understand the line of... I understand it from his point of view. And people say, well, okay, you should fight Joshua. You should fight Klitschko. Prove yourself. Also, you earn more cash. You also probably lose. And do you earn more money in the long run by fighting Ruiz Jr., who you think that you're going to... You probably think that you're going to beat. And then you are even more of a superstar down under in New Zealand than you already are, and then you could earn some serious money just by taking one or two defences at home. So do you take the money to go and fight Joshua or Klitschko and earn a sack load of cash, or do you play the long game and build the Joshua fight even more, build the Klitschko fight even more? What do you do? What would you do, John?
Me? I don't know. Cash out and take the largest amount of money available.
Put a deposit down on a house.
Yeah.
Like a mansion.
Well, that's not what I'm going to spend my money on. Buy a boat and a drone. I've always wanted a drone.
Okay, well, let's move on from the action to Tyson Fury. Unfortunately, was in the news pretty much every day over the last 7 days. Clearly something not right there. Clearly he's not in a good place, you would think, from I mean people are listening to this.
Quite a lot has happened since our last podcast with Tyson Fury.
The main thing, of course, was the Rolling Stone interview. But if you want to
briefly sum up,
put it in three bullet points. What's happened in the last week?
He has allegedly failed a VADA test in September before the Klitschko fight for cocaine, and that comes after the.
Did we not have that last week?
I think that happened just after we...
Oh, we did, you're right, you're absolutely right.
So we were unaware of that last week.
Yes.
Then he declared his retirement on Twitter, and 2 hours and 56 minutes later, unretired. Then he gave a pretty disturbing, or certainly worrying, interview to Rolling Stone magazine, which gave an insight into his state of mind, and now apparently he's considering going on I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here. I don't even know what's going on.
I think it's a real shame whatever's going on with Tyson Fury at the moment. I've spoke to people inside the industry this week. Some have suggested that he's kind of playing people a little bit, but to my mind, Tyson Fury is in a complete and utter mess. Even if you take what he was saying to Rolling Stone with a pinch of salt, it still exhibits a very, very delicate frame of mind to me.
Yeah, and it's not the first time he's made comments like this. You know, years ago he spoke about depression and suicidal sort of feelings, or what sounded like suicidal feelings, to The Guardian. Around the Klitschko fight, he was talking about his ups and downs around the first one, you know, talking about that sort of terrible come down after the excitement of the fight. And even, you know, at a press conference he was at for the Klitschko rematch before it was postponed, which it was postponed before it was cancelled.
So when he got his belly out.
So he went from just sort of sitting there with his head in his hands saying, I'm just a... just almost asking, what's the point of this? What's the point of doing any of this? You know, quite a bleak view for someone who's meant to be going in for their first world title defence. And then he whipped his shirt off and started saying all that kind of stuff. So there was this lurch from quite sort of, you know, bleak outlook to then like playing the fool again. I don't even know. There have been worrying signs for a while now, and it's a real shame.
Yeah, it's a real shame. This kind of news about maybe going into the jungle. I shouldn't really dwell on that too much on this, but that's not the best idea in the world for Tyson Fury, particularly. I mean, they'll throw a bit of cash at him. They won't throw him anywhere near as much money as he would have earned for fighting Vladimir Klitschko again. But for someone who is so... feels like he's been victimised by the media, feels like they're out to get him, then there are places a lot better than going on I'm a celebrity, get me out of here, which let's face it, can be quite heavily edited to favour someone or to make someone look ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, I don't watch I'm a Celebrity because, as you know, I'm a huge Towie fan, but I can't see how the programme makers would do anything other than try and take advantage of Tyson in his current state. It surely would be exploitative. Surely they'd make a mockery of him, and surely it's...
Of course it is. I mean, if all of this that he said to the Rolling Stone is true, and he has been drinking every day for the last 6 months or something along those lines, been taking cocaine every day for the last 6 months, he needs to go to rehab. He needs to go and sort himself out. He doesn't need to go and sort himself out with a few million people watching him on ITV. Someone needs to look after him, put their arm around him, take his phone off him for a bit, tell him just to stop tweeting. At Boxing News, we have always been big supporters of Tyson Fury. Ultimately,
well, he's a talent,
isn't he? I still stand by the fact that him beating Klitschko last year was one of the best wins of all time by a British fighter. It was. It really was. It wasn't particularly pretty, but he beat the most dominant divisional champion of the century so far. Boxing, I think, is perhaps the one place where if he's active, would be the best place for him. If he was active, if he was going from fight to fight to fight. It's when he's not fighting that seems to be the issue. But being world heavyweight champion hasn't suited him either. Let's see what happens. It's just a shame, because if you go back 6 months ago and Joshua had just won the IBF title and then David Haye had made a comeback, so you got Joshua and Hay, and atop that you've got Tyson Fury. It looked like we were on the brink of a very, very, very special time in heavyweight boxing.
Yeah.
And okay, we can still have Joshua Klitschko, we can still have Joshua Hay, but without Tyson Fury, it's not nearly as special as it would have been. It's a shame, but ultimately, at the same time, he's not stupid. And although some of his comments...
He says some pretty crazy...
Yeah, he says ridiculous things, but he understands the value of money, surely. He understands what he's giving up in terms of money. And if the sole reason for doing that is that he thinks he's being persecuted, victimised by the press, then, frankly, he has got to grow up a little bit as well.
But it's hard for us from, you know, we're now on the outside looking in.
So yeah, it's true. It is true. It's true. And it ultimately as well, and as I said before in a column, depression, and I think I said it last week, so I won't go too much into it, but he is showing all the signs of depression. And I think there's a few people going, he's not depressed. He clearly is.
Yeah, I don't think he would walk away from a Klitschko rematch unless there was something wrong. And I can, you know, I think it, you know, he was talking about not being able to motivate himself for training and that kind of stuff. So yeah, I think that is a problem. I don't think he's, you know, yeah, I don't think he's scared of the Klitschko rematch because he's worried about losing it, as some like pundits have said. I don't see that at all.
Yeah, okay, so let's move on from Tyson Fury. Ultimately, as I said, we do wish Tyson Fury all the best, but there's a part of me now that just that hopes he can just kind of go and get himself sorted out away from the glare of the public, really.
Stepping away from the limelight, it's surely now's the time to do that, especially as, you know, a lot of the things he has said have reflected badly on him, have reflected badly on boxing. It's made it a bit ridiculous at times.
Okay, so let's move on from Tyson Fury. Hopefully the next time we talk about Tyson Fury, we'll have something good to say. Let's look ahead to this weekend and old Ricky Burns, your old favourite, John. I remember when we both started, Ricky Burns was your hero.
I have many heroes, but yeah.
You are a bit like that, a bit fickle.
I haven't abandoned him. I mean, we better speak quickly because he's going to be fighting in a couple of hours.
It's true. It's good to see him back. It is an indication of kind of the world title picture at the moment that he got back so quickly. But again,
he's a proper three-weight world champion.
Well, he is. Yes, his WBA belt is the proper one.
Sort of. Yeah.
Kind of, because the WBA haven't yet created.
Well, it wasn't going to be, and then Broner lost it on the scales, didn't he?
Speaking of Broner, Eddie Hearn said this week that Burns was offered this fight against Relic. Is that how you say it? Pronounce his name?
That's how I'm going to pronounce it.
Relic. He was offered that at home in front of his hometown fans, which, if you've experienced a Ricky Burns night up in Glasgow, it is bedlam, it's something else. Or he could have gone off and had a pretty handsome payday taking on Adrian Broner, and he chose this. What do you make of that, John? What does that say about Ricky Burns' character?
He says he's a hero, Matt.
Could that decision come back and bite him? Relic, from what I've seen, looks decent, if unspectacular. Ricky Hatton behind him, a lot of positive noises. Burns, okay. Good, he did well to get the title back, but prior to that, they'd been in different form for what, 2.5-3 years, probably since he stopped Kevin Mitchell.
Yeah, it's a hard one because the loss to Crawford was, you know, bad for him at the time. Then obviously Crawford has gone on to be brilliant. The loss to Zlatan Cannon looked really bad at the time, and you're looking at thinking Ricky Burns shouldn't be losing to him. But then Zlatan Cannon's gone on to win a WBC title.
I mean, Zlatan Cannon now is probably the greatest lightweight of all time, isn't he?
Other than Luke Campbell, yes. But you still have this sense that Burns is. Burns' prime time seems to be behind him, and that he's still good, but how good against a top elite guy? I don't think Relic is a top elite guy. He seems quite strong, but I still think Burns is quite tough. So I think Ricky should win this, but it'll be interesting to see how well he performs, you know, what if Broner is next? What do we make of Adrian Broner? Still good, but
beatable, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. but maybe he's only beatable by people who've got, you know, a pretty decent dig behind their shots. It's pretty hard to outskill Bruner.
True. What else would you like to talk about?
I asked two very good questions on Twitter this week.
Come on then.
One was, what is your favourite book? So I'm asking you, what is your favourite book?
My favourite, what, boxing book?
It's up to you how you want to answer this.
My favourite book is perhaps One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
My God.
I would say that's my...
It's literally one of my favourites too. We must be soulmates. My second question on Twitter was, what's your favourite boxing / boxing training montage? You could go for a classic from Rocky.
Well, I think the first one that came to mind was Rocky IV.
That's the right answer, mate.
Rocky IV, running through the snow. And I also had the Rocky IV... Well, my dad, God rest his soul, took me to see... Well, he told me he was taking me to see Rocky IV. And we got to the cinema and the queues were around the building. That day I didn't get to see Rocky IV. That day I wept. But when I eventually did go and get to see Rocky IV, the next thing I asked for was the Rocky IV soundtrack. And I had it on vinyl. Wow. And it had Burning Heart by Survivor, Living in America, James Brown.
Big tunes.
I mean, probably not James Brown's greatest song, but certainly up there. And it also had the cleverly titled Training Montage.
Love it.
And I used to listen to that quite a lot.
I can imagine. First tape I ever had was the soundtrack of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles film.
Really? Tape?
It was cassette tape.
Oh, I lived through the cassette era.
Those were the days.
Okay.
Anything you'd like to ask me?
What is your favourite boxing haircut?
Oh, so many. So many of the modern era. I think it's Usyk's hair from the 2012 Olympic Games is a timeless classic.
Why did he change that?
Madness. You know, Nishioka always had extremely well-placed kind of fronds of hair. But yeah, I'm going to have to stick with Usyk.
Okay. One more then. Who is the best dressed boxer when he was in the ring of all time?
Is it Sherif Bokhari who came in dressed as a lion?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
It's hard to...
I think you, if you look back...
Who wouldn't want to dress up as a lion?
I think you look back at people like Hector Camacho, and people like that from the 80s, there was some serious outfits. Jorge Paez, there was some serious outfits going on then. But I always liked Mike Tyson's nod to simpler times when he would come into the ring with just a kind of a towel around him and no socks, those little tiny black ankle boots, black shorts.
That very was... dangerous not wearing socks. Killed Tim Bradley.
Manny Stewart always was said that boxers should always wear boots to they should always wear boots that go well above their ankles to prevent injury, and anyone not doing that is playing with fire in a boxing ring. He also said that if you're trying to revive a fighter in the late stages of a fight, don't launch a whole bucket of water over them, because the only place that water is going to sit then is in their shorts, and they're going to be carrying around excess weight in the latter stages of a fight when they're already cream crackered.
So what do you do?
Just give them a little flick. Give them a little flick, give them a little squirt.
Do you know something weird? So during this year's Olympics, the Uzbek team had this really bizarre corner routine where at every break between rounds, I don't know what, they'd sort of had this towel that I don't know what they'd done to it or soaked it with water, and then the guy would sit on his stool, the coach would like squat in front of him, like squat down low, and then sort of launch this towel, and then sort of so the water would sort of burst out into their face, then flap the towel around for a bit, and then like really quickly he'd be sort of squatting like in the air, and he'd grab the guy's leg.
Squatting in the air?
Yeah, obviously this doesn't work for a podcast. So he's like, you know, he's like squatting low down, so his legs are at right
angles.
Okay,
but his feet are actually on the canvas.
Yeah, and yeah. Then he like grab the guy's legs and furiously massage them. It was weird.
Okay, with those...
Not necessarily ineffective.
With those final pearlers, we'll leave you. If you do want us to answer any weird, wonderful questions like those next time, do let us know. Via Twitter would probably be the best medium to get us on.
At Boxing News Ed.
At Boxing News Ed.
At Matt C. Boxing News.
At John Denon.
Or at Boxing News JD.
At Boxing News JD, your business title.
Yeah. My responsible Twitter persona.
Okay, right. So let's call it a day. Thanks everyone for listening. Thanks always for your support. And again, do get out there and get a copy of Boxing News this week. It is, it's a good read, as well as catching up with the Tyson Fury saga. We also have an in-depth tribute to Mike Towell. There's the report from that fight. We were ringside as well in Germany for Nathan Cleverley. Various stories, exclusives with Terry Flanagan. There's also a nice story with Jackie Callan, who looks back on her relationship with James Toney. She recently, that was infamously crumbled, but they are pals again. She talks about a recent dinner date they went on. Feature with Vinny Pazienza. Anyone that he was an 80s child and grew up loving boxing will surely have loved Vinny Pazienza. Really good feature there. Also got an extract from the Curtis Woodhouse autobiography, which is exceptional and well worth a read. So, boxing news, all that and more. Get involved.